So, Karen,
Yes.
we're going to be talking about the plastic body. What does that mean to you?
It means that the body changes constantly, depending on internal circumstances and external, so that there is a constant reformulation. And it can be in our interest and it can go against us. So that's the complication of
So that in that sense, the body is really not an object, but it's in process.
Exactly. Now, I didn't know this until I started to work with John Perakis, who I believe you know as well. It was a very important part of his teaching to me, how that as we could begin to get energy to flow in the body, changes could occur, some faster, some slower. This was very important because as I later studied and began to do more research in that area, I found that our DNA is constantly changing due to stressors. And if we can change in a negative way, I begin to believe we can change positively also. So it's a sometimes a reshaping and a reformulation, but the plasticity is a marvelous thing and works for us as body psychotherapists.
So we're talking about the reshaping, and connecting that to sending energy, having a flow of energy,
Right.
without which, it would not be possible to do that.
Right. So what happens energetically is that because of generally external circumstances, but these can happen in the womb. I mean, you can be a fetus and your mother can be in a place where there's a lot of air pollution. That will affect you. You might go into contraction. And that might carry forward into life. So, what we find is external circumstances are always causing the body to change, often into a contracted form or a blocked form. So, we all have natural organic energy that flows through us. But if there's a loud noise, we go into freeze. And that energy gets blocked or locked, you could say, in the muscles or the fasci of the body. And it will stay there forever until the person dies, unless something is done to change that. And that's where I, in my work, have learned to intervene with different experiences. And they can be quiet, like meditation, or quite active, like jumping up and down, to begin to move the energy out of its locked, blocked position.
Yeah, so when we're talking about energy this way, we're not talking about a metaphysical concept. We're talking about, how the body, how the person is reacting to circumstances, reacting to what's around it. And so when everything goes well, there's kind of a state of flow and responding nicely, flowing with the environment. And as you pointed out, something surprising, then there is a jolt, there's a block, something stops. So this is the kind of energy we're talking about, something that's very concrete.
Right. It's called, some in Chinese it's called qi, and in India it's called prana. We call it life force, or it's a biological energy. We all have it. It's part of what keeps us alive. When that energy stops, then we're in a stuck place and often dead. So it's connected to the bloodstream and it flows through us. So very important. And you're right, when if, I don't know who the audience is for this, but if they can think about themselves when they're in a happy moment, then there's probably their body is in a better posture, and they feel a flow, and they feel a glow, not just in their face, but throughout their whole system. Mm-hmm. And when a person has a negative situation, whether they're frightened or they're angry or someone's delivering anger toward them, if they tune into it, they're going to feel a contraction, not just up here or in their chest or in their fist, but throughout their whole body. So the problem, from my point of view, is that people are unconscious or out of awareness, you might say. So all this thing, these things are happening with their body and they're not attuned to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not being attuned, you can't change anything.
Yeah. But so that's a big point, is that what we're talking about is that essentially the body or the person as a whole is not something that's separate from the environment. It lives in a certain environment. We live in a certain environment, and we respond moment by moment to what's happening. And the kind of response we have is kind of a whole body, whole organism response, not just a response of the head, the mind, or a specific organ or a specific part of the body. We orient to that situation and we respond to it.
Right. So it's important also to recognize that in our response, we're affecting other systems. So not only am I talking about plastic body in terms of how I look and whether my body appears integrated or disjointed, but I'm talking about how if the connection of the body to emotion. So all the chemistry that runs through us is our emotion. That's our fear, our anger, our happiness, our joy. And if we're too much in the negative emotion and unaware of it, unconscious, that's linked to disease. We have so much empirical evidence now of even the connection between heart disease and diabetes and other things to what he stresses that fetuses who have no control over what's going on at all experienced in the womb. But those things can be turn up in their life at 60 or 70 years of age if they were starving in the womb or if there wasn't enough touch or if their parents got into physical assaulted each other while they were still in the womb. That will come out in illness later in life. So being able to rectify this, that's what I see my life work is about, is I can't stop some of these things from happening, but knowing that the body can change and reformulate and find new pathways allows my work to progress.
Yeah. So we're talking about something that's not just about physical interactions, but there's also the emotional experience that's going to have an impact. And for all of these factors, what is really very motivating to you is the possibility of actually shifting, changing the way we change and reversing some of these patterns.
Right, exactly. And that's very exciting. And you know, I'm happy to be in a position where I can train body therapists and supervise them and work with talk therapists and have them bring more of this work into their practices, because the more we do it, the more positively people will be affected. Epigenetics shows us that nobody has to directly remain as they are in some difficult or stressful situation. I mean, we can change it to some degree, not totally.
Yeah. So there's a sense of not just dealing with problems piecemeal, but, you know, having a sense of transformation. Mm-hmm. Again, within reason, within the limits of what's possible, but something about a transformative process of how we respond to the world.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, I think as we're talking about bodies and plastic, I mean, it's... We know as professionals and experts that bodies can change under the right circumstances. And it's helping other people to begin to recognize that there is that possibility for them. So many people have such negative views of their bodies, you know, because of our culture, at least Western culture, where women have to look a certain way, and probably men do too, so that when that they see their imperfections and they judge themselves. And therefore, it's really hard sometimes to get people to see their body from a positive framework. And they don't even want to do anything body therapy or even look at their body because body is negative, body is shameful, body has betrayed them. So it's finding a way to help people accept their bodies so that they can work on some of these things that have been stuck in their muscles and in their unconscious.
Yeah. So a big obstacle is a shame and dissociation from the body, mm-hmm. which then makes it much harder to do this process of transformation because we don't have the tool and the compass to see where we are.
Right. So let me ask you, Serge, is there anything in particular you are thinking that you would like to know about plasticity or plasticity in the body?
So, you know, just maybe a sense of how you have a sense mm-hmm. of where a person, a client, mm-hmm. might be, whether you have a vision of how it can change, whether it's something that, you know, happens moment by moment without necessarily having a vision. You know, I also know that, you might be referring to the character types and see if that's something that gives you guidance. So kind of a general question about how you work with that notion of plasticity to transform it, to use it in clinical practice.
Yeah, so usually I do start with the character types in the, not in a specific way, but in a kind of a blurred way. In most bodies, I see several what we might call character types. Like, for example, if someone, so I'm just looking at a person when I meet them. I'm looking to see where their energy is stuck. You know, where they have too much energy and it's not flowing, and that would be in big muscles or a certain kind of body fat. I'm looking at how their body fits together. Does the head look like it's not connected to the chest? Are the legs too small to hold the body? Do the arms extend? Can that person reach out and greet people and bring them closer? So I'm kind of looking at all these kinds of things. And some of it has to do with what we call character types. I might see a collapse in the chest, knowing this person has given up somehow. Or I might see a very dominant chest, meaning the person feels above other people or more than. So I do look for those things, but I don't see them as something to blame the person for or to judge them. I just see it as, okay, this is what energy did to this body. And energy was shaped by some of the external stresses that this person felt, or even internal stresses.
Yeah.
So let's see what we can do now with the energy to try to reverse this, to find the person in their natural core self.
See, so the metaphor would be, say, going to a mountain, a windswept mountain, and seeing a tree that's all bent. Mm-hmm. And so from seeing it, you don't ascribe it to the character of the tree to say you're a bad tree or, you know, but you just notice, you know, this is a place where the winds tend to blow very strong, you know, are very strong and tend to blow toward the east or something of that nature.
Right.
And so you see how the person was shaped by the circumstances they were confronting. Mm-hmm. And having a sense of that dynamic also gives you an idea of what the dynamic might be to shape, you know, to transform that figure.
Exactly. So Right. So, you know, then I can have the person, I can design exercises for that tree that's just specific to that tree. And that's what I love about this work. I don't know one person. I mean, we are all snowflakes. And so there's no design that I would give, for instance, to you, that I would maybe give to another person. Everyone needs a different thing. Some people will start with leg stuff. Other people will start just holding themselves and rocking. Other people will start very dramatically with a lot of pounding. So it's a wonderful opportunity for me to be creative and, you know, enjoy my creativity with my knowledge. And it's a wonderful thing for people to know that they are not stuck. Because once your body's stuck in a kind of way, it defines your personality. Right now, if we stop smiling and look very sad, we could actually affect our bodies.
Yeah.
So, I love this work is what I'm trying to say, because we can take people and bring them to their soul, what I consider their soul's drive for who they really were meant to be in this lifetime. Yeah.
So maybe let's talk a little more about exercises, because say in the context of talk therapy, people talk about stuff. And here, doing exercises. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, how that works in order to reshape people, and maybe give a couple of examples.
Okay, so I work a little differently than we learned in our core training.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the core training, the teaching is mostly about just getting the energy flow going again. So if a person has stuck in their blocks in their shoulders, we're going to have them hit, stuff like that. But that, to me, hasn't really changed the body. So, I mean, I don't see bodies change enough just from hitting a cube or whatever. So I slow down a lot of the work we do. People have to feel their body. That's the most important thing for the first step. You can't feel it, you're not going to change it. You can't feel something if you're moving too quickly. So let's say for someone who is frightened of contact, maybe they've been traumatized, they're the deer in the headlights, so people are scary to them. So their tendency is to either lean back or push away, or just go away, go inside themselves very deeply so that nothing comes out. Like if I don't move toward you, you're not going to move toward me and I'll be safe, right? So with that person, I might just start by having them, I don't know if you can see me, but stand, well, you can't really stand up with their hands like that. Just a simple movement. That's all they can do. But that's better than being locked inside themselves. So sometimes the work is very slow. It might just be doing this. Almost feels like Tai Chi or something. So I have to get people to kind of relate to their body before we can change anything. So in some ways, I use the stronger core work to get the energy flow going, but then I go into slower kind of work for the change process.
So is it okay? I want to just elaborate a little bit on what you're saying. What you were showing is that we tend to have patterns, mm-hmm. movement, which mm-hmm. is how we respond to situations.
Right.
And so you were showing the example of somebody who is responding through fear and is leaning back or pushing away. Right. And so what we're talking about here is about having that person explore the possibility of a different response mm-hmm. by noticing what they do and shifting to a different movement. Right. And you're describing doing that, you know, is something that if it were neutral, it wouldn't be a big deal. But because it's such a pattern, you know, of reacting to situations of pressure and threat, these are difficult because you have neural pathways to go to very specific responses, and it's difficult to change them. Mm-hmm. So in order to make it possible, you go very slowly in doing that, so people can notice what's happening instead of just, you know, getting it, but without being connected to the experience and the emotions and all of that is entailed in changing the way they respond.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to say, that there's a body awareness. The other thing, the other reasons for going slow is there's often unconscious memories locked to some of those neuro patterns you were just talking about. And they have to come out for a person to change. If we leave that inside the person, they're likely going to revert to the old pattern sooner than later. So in other words, if I have to bring out in a certain way my no, don't come near me, I'm frightened of you, before I can do this. And even in doing this, I may have to say, you know, I'm sitting with my palms open now. I have to say, I'm opening to you, but I'm still frightened that you'll hurt me. So I may have to actually put words to some of these new behaviors so that we're actually moving with the person in their process step by step.
Right, right. And so it makes sense because we cannot, you know, just brush away the old behaviors because they're defenses. So there's something that's been very protective. And in order to undo it, you have to relate to the sense of safety without them by, you know, having this process.
Right, exactly. So for me, I love the work and I think it helps a lot of people.
Great. Right. This is part of the Relational Implicit podcast. To see more and subscribe to the newsletter, go to relationalimplicit.com.